Welcome to the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Kennedy, and I'm here to help you become the very best version of yourself. What's up, guys? Welcome back to this week's episode of the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast. Today's guest is a current Southeast Melbourne Phoenix NBL player. He's played over 400 games in the NBL. He's won multiple championships. He's been an Olympian for Australia, obviously, and that is Adam Gibson. Gibbo was kind enough to join us today to chat about a number of different things, particularly how this year has gone so far, and we just go into a bit of detail about his career so far, some things that he's taken away as from being a professional athlete, some of the values that he thinks are important to be successful in the league, how he deals with adversity. We talk about a number of different things along the lines of his favorite players that he's played with as teammates, his favorite coach, and then also how he's dealt with the struggles of 2020 and obviously not being able to play with the season being pushed out and whatnot. So it was a fun episode. Thanks to Gibbo for coming on the show. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please do take a screenshot of the show, post it up on Instagram story for me, tag myself, tag Gibbo. We'd love to hear some feedback from today's episode, and we hope you enjoy the show. Gibbo, welcome to the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast, mate. It's a pleasure to have you on.
I appreciate it, mate. I've seen a few of them, and obviously you're big in that world, so it's a pleasure to be on.
Well, before I click record, we've just been talking about your own podcast or the podcast you're running at the moment and how much you're enjoying it. You've just been telling me how you think you're probably the best podcaster in the country at the moment, so I expect good things from this interview.
You'd hope I know a little bit about, you know, answering back good questions, no short answers, but I think I've done 25, which is a lot shorter than what you've done, but yeah, it's been fun, man. It's a lot of fun just talking, and a lot of my guests have been past teammates or, yeah, you know, guys I've played with, and just hearing their stories again and catching up with them from not playing with them for years, that's probably been the best part I've found.
Yeah, we were just talking about how a lot of the time the conversations are best when it is just an actual chat and a conversation. But aside from the fact that, you know, obviously you're doing it for the podcast, has there been like certain things that you've kind of picked up when you're talking with these guests where, like you said, you're just speaking about memories and stuff like that, but almost things that you probably wouldn't usually, that wouldn't come up in conversation with guys that you see all the time?
Yeah, for sure. And some, like, you know, guys that I think I know, and then they tell me certain parts about their life or how they got to where they are, I'm like, well, I didn't know that. Like Mitch McCarron, for example,
yeah,
superstar for Melbourne United, like I would have assumed, not knowing his background and knowing him as a child, that, you know, he's had it fairly easy, like, you know, done great things in basketball, but he was not picked in the AAS team. He barely got a scholarship. Someone dropped out. That's how he went there.
Yeah.
Kind of came to Cairns and barely didn't play a heap. But I would not have known that unless he told me kind of how hard it was for him to make teams and to become a pro basketballer. So, yeah, finding out stuff like that I find really valuable. And most of my guests have been basketballers that I play against. So, yeah, just a better understanding. And I feel like I've got, you know, 20 new kind of better mates just from doing these podcasts.
Yeah, well, when you're only seeing each other on the court, probably things change a little bit when it's if you're in the Australian squad or whatever, and you get to know people better. But outside of that, you're really only coming up against them once you're on the court. And fair to say, most of the time, it's not exactly a catch up to make friends when you're on the court. So, man, 2020, obviously, it's been pretty fucked for everybody. But particularly for when you look at professional sport, obviously, the whole year's been thrown off pretty much in every sport across the whole entire globe. I was wondering earlier, like, what it's like for you as someone who's been in the NBL for a long time, being a professional basketballer for so long, like this year being completely thrown off, how you think it's affected you compared to maybe someone who's just coming into the league and they're trying to break their way in, or maybe they've only had 1 or 2 years as a professional. What do you think are the differences are with the challenges between the two different types of players?
Yeah, obviously been a lot older. Like I've seen the highs and lows of the NBL my whole career. You know, I was in for 3 years. My team in Brisbane folded.
Yeah.
Moved to Melbourne, that team folded. Moved to the Gold Coast, that team folded. So 10 of my kind of 15 years have been a real roller coaster. The NBL finally started to pick back up with Larry Kessman taking over for 5 years, and now we're hit with this again. So I'm hoping that it kind of goes back to as good as can be and back to the level it was, but yeah, I think just being through those teams folding in the past, and obviously like being older, kind of just appreciating, I guess, the position we are in as basketballers. Like we've been in the off season. It hasn't affected us as much as I think other sports and other businesses. So
yeah,
Yeah, I mean, me and Mitch obviously live together. We've found ways to keep busy and stay somewhat sane, I guess, which has been a massive help just having him around the house. But I'd imagine for young kids, I think what's going to affect people is once they come out of this, have they been training and doing as much as they can to be ready for when the season comes around? I think it's going to be the real factor.
Left to their own devices, yeah. Do you think, you know, you had been in the league for so long and season after season, do you reckon like this year of not putting so much, I guess, pressure on the body has actually helped you?
It has. So I've had some kind of ongoing calf issues for the last probably 5 years. And I missed a bunch of games last season with the Phoenix preseason doing some MMA and whatever, like calves kind of went in the preseason and then on and off. And I think I missed 6 games after not missing any of the year before. So we've been doing a lot this off season for my calves. So, you know, it was once his second kind of wave hit, I was like, well, I've got another 2 months now to get fitter and get the calves right. So it has been somewhat of a blessing. Obviously, we've been stuck inside all day. But, for me to be able to go and get some injections and try new things and really work out what's going on with the calves has been awesome. And like I said, it's given me another 2 or 3 months now to really get fit and healthy and hopefully be right by the season start.
Yeah, and do you reckon the motivation's higher or lower coming into games again? Are you well and truly ready to just get back on with it and start the season?
I think higher because everyone just wants to play. You know, we've been stuck inside kind of since March. We've been able to train a little bit, but I think everyone's just so eager to get back out there. So
sick of playing against the same guys.
Sick of seeing the same guys, like limited practice.
Sick of scoring on Creaky every session.
Man, like just seeing him every day. Like I want to beat up on someone else. So I think everyone will be happy to get the season started and just play games again. I said, we've been stuck inside. It's been awesome having the NBA on to watch basketball, but instead of just training against 2 or 3 guys at practice, to actually get our season going again would be a lot of fun.
What's that looking like? Because I think the season, usually starts in October, so roughly a few weeks from now, usually starts then. So when's the start date? Has there been anything confirmed?
Yeah, so originally it was pushed back to December 3rd, 2 months later, and obviously Melbourne's, you know, Victoria is what it is, and it's put a halt to everything. So I think a soft date is mid to late January, maybe early Feb as a new start date. Okay. So that's, four months later than what it normally would be, which is a long time. You know, obviously a lot of guys have lost the chance to go and make more money elsewhere overseas, and it's going to affect next season as well. But at least there's a soft date that we can kind of aim towards and plan and prepare for. But yeah, it is a long time.
Yeah, well, you mentioned plan and prepare. Like how has that looked like for the Phoenix? Like obviously it's hard for the actual basketball coach, but also S&C guys as well to look at how to structure the year when you kind of like usually you know the dates that you're preparing for. You can periodize your training to kind of come into to round one at kind of peak physical condition. So what's that been like? And then mentally as well, like obviously you don't want to spend 12 months just fucking training in preseason with no games in sight. So how have you guys kind of done that?
We're kind of lucky at our club. We've got like Eric Hollingsworth, who's done a lot with, you know, the Australian athletics team and all that stuff. He's so smart plan in place. Obviously it's been hard because we haven't been able to practice. We've been in lockdown. We're allowed 3 days, now we're allowed 4. Yep. For the coach, we've had 4 of us, now 5. A new guy just joined this week, but we can't fly guys in. That's been the biggest battle. We haven't been able to have 10 guys of our own gel where you look at Brisbane, you look at probably Perth. Like these guys have had their full squads going now. So they are at an advantage team-wise and chemistry-wise. You know, when you put a new team together with 5 new guys, that's where you need to bond and play together and learn each other's strengths and weaknesses. So that's been the hardest part, I think, is not having our guys here and then the restrictions we have at practice. Like one guy and one coach at a hoop for a majority of the time. You mentioned it's a long time. We've got pretty smart people in those positions. So we've been going hard now for 2 weeks. This next week will be a lighter week, but there are plans in place to, you know, get us to a certain level, plateau a little bit, go again so that when this certain date hits, we'll be ready to roll. But yeah, it's definitely been challenging and just not having our team around. We can't go and hang out and meet new people and go to the park or go out for a beer or do anything like that because we're stuck inside.
What's obviously season being pushed back a fair way in terms of being able to play preseason games and stuff like that, I'm assuming that'll be pushed back to at least 2021 as well. Like, is there potential? I'm assuming United are training 4 days a week as well. So is there potential for you guys to be able to do some like practice matches against each other, considering you're both, I guess, like in your own little bubble to play against each other to get some form of game fitness?
Yeah, I would hope so. Nothing like that has been talked about because it's still so far away. Like, I think when the new season date kind of got set, I think our pre-season is now going to start November as an official kind of start date.
Something to look forward to is
that's when we start. Like, we're glad as players in Melbourne now to go and practice 4 days a week because it gets us out of the house for a few hours. So nothing's been talked about, but I've got no doubt that if we can't leave Melbourne, we'll try and play some pickup games against them. Whether there's some other guys that are locally here in Melbourne that play basketball that we can put some games together against, we really just don't know. It's all based around this COVID and when the rules are going to change and when we can actually kind of live a normal life. But if that's the case, I would assume the NBL will allow us to join together as two teams and play some games, so it helps us. Because right now we're at a fair disadvantage to the rest of the NBL.
Yeah. Yeah, without a doubt. What's how have you managed to stay motivated? Like, have your motivation levels been quite good? Have you kind of gone through some ebbs and flows with, obviously it's fucking hard. It's hard enough to go out and just train at the moment and just every day go out and do regular workouts, considering, you know, there's kind of, you can't go to the gym and you're doing the same shit each day. But yeah, how have you found it? Have you had periods where you kind of just can't be fucked, or have you been, how's it been?
Big time. It's been the biggest roller coaster. Like, when it first hit, and living with Mitch, who's super motivated, like, I've never seen someone work as hard as he does. The first kind of 3-4 weeks was unreal. Like, we were at the back. His sister was here, so we're doing home workouts. Now you did a live one with him. And
yeah,
that was awesome. Like, all right, this is our situation. Went at it. Kind of plateaued a bit, and kind of a couple of weeks there, I was like, man, I just didn't want to get out of bed. Like, couldn't be bothered. It's cold outside. Like, we've got 4 more months of this. So, you know, take off a couple of weeks and just do actually live like a slob pretty much. And then it opened up a little bit. So we're allowed to go to practice. That was awesome. Like, that was, you know, hit the restart button, start again. We had like a COVID kind of scare at the club, so we had to shut down for 2 weeks in full quarantine and get the test. And then the new stage four hit. So we've gone from 2 weeks not leaving the house to now we're in stage four. We can't leave the house. And that was just a real kind of in a hole. Like, just mentally, wasn't good. But obviously now we've been able to, and again, our club have done an amazing job of exemptions, and now we can go back and practice, which has been, you know, back up the roller coaster. But yeah, for a couple of weeks there, was in a real hole, didn't want to get out of bed, like I said, and it was tough. Even for pro athletes, just to keep that going for so long, not knowing when the end's going to be was super hard. And I can only imagine other people in other businesses and in Melbourne that, you know, lost their jobs, don't get paid, businesses are shutting down. Like, I can only imagine what it's been like for them.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny that you mentioned that, because I was just about to say, you know, you talk to a lot of people who, even when you speak of guys like AFL players at the moment, they're obviously been in their little bubble and they've still been able to somewhat play their full season. And you talk to people and they go, oh, well, it must be, you know, the professional athletes, they only play sport anyway. Like, it's not like that much has been taken away. But when you look at you guys, like, there's literally no difference between, you know, me not being able to go to work and you not being able to go to practice. Like, it's your job, it's your whole livelihood. It's not like outside of that you're going and doing a bunch of other shit. Like, that's your day-to-day job. So I think that's one perspective which people probably don't really consider when they look at the athletes that have been stuck out of their game. It's like the whole livelihood is now gone.
No question. And like 50% pay cuts as well. Yeah. Like, a lot of guys have lost a lot of money for this season upcoming, and who knows how that continues to next season. So there's definitely that side. Talk about pro athletes. I interviewed Hugh Greenwood from the Gold Coast Suns.
And I watched that one, yeah.
He lives in Queensland. He's been able to play football, but everyone else in Queensland can go out and about and live a normal life because he plays pro sport, because he plays with the AFL. They've had set rules where he can only go to the shop once. He can go to get coffee and come back. He can't have people at his house because he plays AFL. And even though he lives in Queensland in a safe place, he's not allowed to do that. So, people probably think these guys can still go and live a normal life because they don't live in Melbourne. But if they play pro sport, if they play for the AFL, they still can't go and do that. So it's not easy. Obviously, we do play a great sport and have a really good life. But we're feeling it just as much as everyone else.
Yeah, for sure. You mentioned at the start, you obviously throughout your career, you've played with a number of different teams, and you mentioned obviously Brisbane and then the Dragons as well, had some really good success at both clubs, and then funnily enough, they both folded. So, and that was early on in your career. So, I mean, you know, even thinking to myself, like when I was playing footy and basketball, like that's all you think about is a sport. You don't think about anything else. You just think about training, playing, nothing else matters, and there is nothing else to think about. But early on for you, you would have kind of figured out that there's a lot more to sport than just being on court. Like the whole business side of things, in the end of the day, is more important, really. Like plays a bigger role than the actual sport itself. So what type of, like what experience was that like for you coming into the league and then two pretty major things happening, especially with successful clubs?
Yeah, well, my second year, we win the championship, one of the best teams to ever play, like 21, 22 game win streak. The next year we make the semis, and then all of a sudden our team's no longer in the league, our owner bankrupt, whatever. And at that point, 3 years in, still only 20, 21. So no clue what's going on in the office or behind the scenes. Moved to Melbourne, here in Melbourne for 1 year with the South Dragons. We win it again. Now this team folds. So now I'm starting to think a bit more like what's, and I can guarantee I'm not the one taking all the money. That team folds. I moved to the Gold Coast, and now I'm kind of, you know, a leader, captain of the up on the Gold Coast and whatever. And that team folds after 3 years. So now it's like, this is wild. Like, you know, know more about why and what's going on and lost money and all that stuff. So yeah, it's, like I said, it's been a roller coaster career. Just highs and lows. Like I kind of wish I was starting now. Well, 5 years ago when the NBL was on a rise, because the opportunities that young kids now have, better money, better opportunity to go overseas, playing NBA preseason games and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it is what it is. I can't complain about the career I've had, but yeah, certainly you learn more the older you get, and to have three teams fold in my first 6 years was pretty eye-opening.
That's crazy. Did that kind of like, I guess, get you to start thinking about diversifying a little bit, like looking more so into the other aspects outside of just the sport, knowing that something so big can just get taken away so quickly? Did that force you then to I guess, put some more time into learning more about the business side of not only basketball, but just outside of sport as well?
A little bit, not as much as I wish I had of. I was still, obviously, you know, 6 years in, still pretty young in the career. I think it was maybe 24 by then or whatever it was. So I wish I had of, and that's kind of what I started probably doing the last probably 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
I've said on a podcast before that, you know, when I was 24, I was getting asked, what are you going to do after basketball? And I'm like, I've got no idea. I just want to keep playing basketball for the next 10 years. So
yeah,
I've been pretty fortunate. And again, like I said, I wish I had of, you know, whether it was some kind of course, I learned more around business or whatever it may be. But that's why I'm starting to do more stuff now. Obviously, you know, 33, close to the end of the career, podcast, stuff with media. NBL have been amazing helping me out with that kind of stuff and some pathways. But I definitely recommend young kids starting out to add a little course. Cole Adams has been amazing with that stuff. He's doing some courses online at Deakin. And
yeah.
Just little strings to the bow that you never know you may use, and you may meet someone along the way that potentially you can start building up something outside, like you said, of business. Creaky's amazing at it. Like he's, one, he's nonstop, like workout and looking after his body, but he's always, you know, talking to people, meeting people, financial planners, like doing all this stuff, which he'll be set up if he stops playing basketball now, which I think I've learned a lot of him probably living with him the last year.
Yeah, cool. And so I'll ask the question now, what does it look like after basketball?
I still don't know. Like I've got some things I'm passionate about. I want to stay involved in basketball.
Do you like the media side of stuff? Like in terms of the, you know, you're getting into the podcasting and stuff now. So obviously building up your skills with interviewing and that type of stuff. Is that something that you enjoy?
Yeah, I do. I don't know if it's the meeting people, but like I've been doing stuff around, like I've been, you know, as stupid as it is, you know, hosting trivia days and stuff for the club.
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff. I feel like there's an area where I can do that. And I want to be involved in basketball. It's what I've done pretty much half my life. I want to coach or be a coach. And I've talked to the club about that. And there's certain, we're trying to put some plans in place to do that. But, you know, there's not many jobs. Assistant coaches, whatever, it doesn't pay well. It's not like the NBA where you got 10 coaches to get paid a lot of money. So, doing the podcast, pretend, you know, whether it's commentating, some role within the NBL or with the club that I'm with, hopefully the Phoenix, Just I want to stay involved in the game because, like I said, I've done it half my life. It's kind of all I've known since school, and obviously super passionate about it.
That's awesome. You touched on before about the calves in the past kind of 12 months, I guess, but throughout your career, have you had many, serious injuries or setbacks?
Calves and ankles. Every basketball's probably rolled
standard
ankles. I had a clean out in 2006. My ankles roll now and just bounce back there. There's nothing left in them, but the calves have been the biggest issue. I had it back in 2012, the first one, and, you know, learned kind of back then to play through a lot of injuries. And if I wouldn't change it, but I probably shouldn't have played through some of them, you know, taping them up and just playing through semifinals and stuff like that. And the calves have been the biggest issue ongoing. Obviously, when you get older, they're harder to fix. So it's just some plans in place, trying some new things, these injections, hydro injections of the new thing that I've tried. And if that doesn't work, there's some Botox, which probably sounds weird getting Botox in your calves, but that's the next step as well. So this, like we said before, the period of having such a long COVID break has allowed me to try these things to try and get them as good as possible. Harley Bunnell from Melbourne Demons did that. He had ongoing issues and he seems to be fine now. So, calves have been the biggest thing, touch wood.
What's your, like, how do you approach that when you do have a setback? Like, I mean, everybody, regardless of whether they play professional sport or not, like, has setbacks and disappointments. So I think the something that I've particularly learned over the last few years is like the difference in those who kind of like make the most out of the situation is kind of like how you respond to it and what you do or what you focus on straight after and how long you kind of just dwell on the fact that you've got an injury or whether things haven't gone your way. So do you like kind of have a process now or over the years you feel like you've gotten better at dealing with like that type of adversity or even, you know, I mentioned injuries, but even like big losses or disappointments in games and seasons and stuff like that. How do you deal with that? Or do you have a bit of a process that you kind of like to follow?
I was thinking about the car thing before, like even during this, because the COVID thing's one thing, that the roller coaster, but the cars have been the same. So, I feel great and I train for a few days or a week or, 2 weeks. And then all of a sudden something spikes up again. Now it's like, man, like, are these ever going to get good? And then I have the injections, train for a week. Something else doesn't feel good. So the roller coasters of not just COVID, but the calves as well. It's been kind of tough and I don't really speak too much about it. You know, I don't really like to show weakness when it comes to that kind of stuff, but it has been a real grind and I still don't know if they're going to be good. I don't know if these injections are going to work. It's frustrating. I definitely learned to, like, there's bigger issues in the world. I remember I was playing with Adelaide. We played in Townsville. Threw a bad pass, cost us a game, like lost 2 kilos in like 3 days, which if I look at a Big Mac, I'm putting on weight. So to lose a cup, like stress and just like, that was by far my worst moment in basketball was this one game. And that whole season was shit ass from my point of view and just, my worst year. But, obviously a lot goes on in the world and just realizing that we play a game, it is a game, not to get too high in wins, too low in losses. As long as you do the work, you put in the work, you know you've done all you can and you do things the right way, that's all that really matters. So as far as the wins and losses goes, it's when you get older, I think you realise and probably when you're younger and you miss a shot or whatever, you probably take it to heart, which you probably should, but that just motivates you to do more work and get in the gym and put in, shoot more shots or, do more work to not let that happen again, I think is the biggest thing. It's more a motivation of, I don't ever want that feeling again. I don't want that to happen again. So I'm going to do more to make sure it doesn't.
Make sure it doesn't happen again. Love it. As a professional athlete, obviously outside of the actual skill of being good at basketball, what do you think is probably one of the most important aspects of being able to have like a long professional career?
Obviously you've got to take care of your body. That's number one. You can't play if you can't get on the court. So, I know when I was younger and probably until you're 24, 25, you don't have to look after your body as much because you can play back-to-back games. You can eat whatever you want. It doesn't affect you. When you start getting a little bit older and later in your career, like the stuff that builds up and it does affect you. So you definitely have to look after your body. That's prime time. For me, like I've always been pretty smart. Like, I've never relied on athleticism or speed, really, besides my first few years to play a game. I feel like I can outthink people. So when it comes to scout, knowing who you're playing against, what they like to do, tendencies, who are the best shooters, what offense do they run. If you don't naturally know how to do that, you need to spend time and watch video and talk to a coach so that, you know, if you're guarding Chris Fielding, you know which way he wants to dribble the ball or how he likes to shoot the shot. That'll get you a long way into a career. Obviously, for me, I've always been a defender. I started out as a defender. You just want to be someone you can rely on. Keep it simple. Do the right things. Just be solid on court. Obviously, some guys are flary. Some guys take all the shots. But role players, just play your role. Know what you're good at. I talked to Damian Martin about the Perth Wildcats, and you're brought to the club to do a job. Mm-hmm. Do that job. That's all you have to worry about. If you do your job, you're fine. You can add in some things. You can, you know, work on your other parts of your game. But if you don't come in and do your job that you're brought in to do, you play your role, you'll be gone. And I think that's why they've been so successful. They have guys come in and Greg Hyatt just rebound the ball. Damian Martin just dog the ball. Defender. That's why they're so good. So they know that Bryce Cotton, Steiner, they're going to take the shots.
Yeah.
And you'll get some shots. But if you don't come in and play your role, then you're not what we want.
The teammates that you've had across the throughout the years in the NBL, we'll break it up into import and then Aussie. Like, who are the two best teammates that you've played with throughout the years?
Cool. The imports, there's been some unbelievable players, both on and off the court. Like, obviously Torrey Craig, one of the Denver Nuggets, was just in the finals. Great guy on and off the court. Like, could hoop. Unbelievable basketball player, but just an all-round good guy off the court. Ebby Arap, back with the Bullets back in the day. Same thing, like all the time in the world for your teammates and whatever, but unbelievable player. There's been that many, like John Robertson from this year, one of the best point guards, just shooting the ball and again, a great guy off the court. Like, I haven't had too many guys. There's been a couple, but not too many imports that are dickheads and you don't want to spend any time with. They're probably three, and I know I'm missing a bunch because I play with a lot. Dante Smith, back with the South Dragons, was unbelievable. Ex kind of Atlanta Hawk NBA player.
Yeah.
And then Aussies, CJ Bruton's always been a kind of a mentor and someone I used to watch, played against him and then got to play with him and just, That's a point guard, play for the national team. Great for the team, like making sure you're happy and, you know, Sammy Mack got a shot or a touch and just to keep everyone up and about, but then could just come in and just take over a game with three shots and still keep in contact with him. Joe Ingles, Mika Vekona and Dylan Boutra, two of my favourites, both Kiwis, but won championships with both them at Brisbane and the Dragons, were just two guys that don't care about himself, pass up open shots and get someone else a shot, just all about everyone else. Those two guys, I always say, like, Dylan Boucher is one of the best teammates because being a point guard, he's a foreman. The way he comes and helps you, like, if you get beat, you know, he's there. Just stuff like that is hard to find. And teams that win, I think, have good foremen. Like the Perth Wildcats with Nick Kay, you know, Mika Vekona with New Zealand, Sean Redditch, like good foremen, I think are the reason why you win championships.
It's unreal. You played with some pretty incredible players.
And I know I'm missing a whole bunch of players too.
Yeah, hopefully they hear it. And now on the other side of that, who has been, I mean, hopefully your coach doesn't listen to this if he's not the answer here, but who has been probably the best coach that you've played under and why? Like, was there a reason why that you found them to be such a good coach? Not only to you, but to everybody on the team.
Joey Wright, no question, Joey Wright. I mean, I had Brian Gorgian. I only had him for 1 year, unfortunately. I think he's probably going to go down as one of the best coaches to ever coach in Australia. Yeah. But me personally, Joey Wright, hands down. I had him for 15 or 16 years now. Had him my first ever year, like my first ever coach was him. He gets you better as an individual, helped my shot, build my confidence. You play hard and you play for him. Like the amount of players that are very average players that he's turned into 100, 200, whatever NBL game players is phenomenal. And the good thing about him is, and he's not everyone's cup of tea. A lot of people probably won't like him. You see him from the outside, you see him yelling and screaming and all this stuff, but he will spend just as much time with the superstar as he will a development player. If you're a training kid, you come and watch, you come and be a part of the group. He'll, if you need to shoot or if you want to do an individual after practice for an hour, he spends just as much time with the main guys as the other guys. And if you're not playing hard, you have the right to start if you're a starter. If you're not playing well, the guy on the bench is, he's playing for the rest of the game. Again, next game you'll start, play your role, you do whatever you do, you play well, you keep your minutes, but he rewards people that work hard, and that's what I love about him.
That's awesome. Mate, just to just before we wrap up, obviously Phoenix last year in the first year started off extremely well, and things are looking really good. And I mean, all in all, like it was a very good year. Dropped off towards the end, but how do you see things going moving forward, especially in the next season anyway?
Yeah, for a first club, I mean, I think that was always going to happen. I don't think anyone expected to start 5-0 and whatever and have that start to the season. Drop-offs, a brand new club, brand new players, whatever. I think their success at the start was just based around how the team was put together, behind the scenes, everything. Like, that's one of the most professional clubs I've played for, and it was our first year there. So that says a lot about what they've done behind the scenes. But great start, what we've done in the community, definitely a tick as far as the club's concerned. Obviously, the drop-offs, some injuries, not the right personnel. All that comes into play with a brand new team. Obviously, we've got some changes now. Cam Glidden and Ruben Trang have come from Brisbane, who I think were underused last year. Unbelievable players that slot right into our culture and how we want to play. We've still got some pieces to bring in with the import point guard and probably a big guy, but all things shaping up well. You know, Creaky had a great year. Hopefully, he has another great year. Motivation to go elsewhere will, you know, hopefully get him and us firing. But yeah, I think we'll get the right pieces in personnel wise, and as long as we get the right imports, I think we'll be tough.
Unreal, man. Well, Gibbo, thanks for joining the show today, mate. Appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on. Good luck for the season ahead, mate.
I appreciate it. Stay safe in COVID, mate. One day soon we'll get out and about and we'll catch up.
Bloody oath. Guys, thanks for tuning into today's show. If you've enjoyed the episode, which I'm sure you have, please do take a screenshot for me and tag myself and Gibbo up on your Instagram story. We'd love to get some feedback on the episode. Gibbo, thanks again, mate. And everybody who's tuned in, thank you very much for listening. And we'll chat to you in the next show.